Once upon a time, there lived a very short prince. From infancy, he lagged behind other children of his own age in height, and he was forever the target of jokes and pranks by his peers. Even when he had reached adulthood, he did not even reach 5 feet in height. Well, in time, his father, the king, died, and the short prince took over the throne. But the taunting of his peers didn't diminish. Outside of his presence, they called him His Lowness instead of His Highness. And people refused to bow before him in public. Well, the new king decided to take a vacation. And before he left, he called in some carpenters and builders, and he gave them very detailed instructions of some adjustments he'd like made in the palace. And while he was gone, the laborers worked, and after a few weeks, he returned to find their work completed. Every door of the palace was lowered to 5 feet. He could walk through every door without having to duck. Everybody else had to bow down to come into his presence. And he thought to himself, they may not respect me, but they will certainly bow down in my presence. Now, that's an apocryphal story, but there's a moral to the story that I think rings true, and one that we see in the Scriptures. It's especially true of our relationship to God. There is a low door into heaven. Not one of a certain height. But what I mean is the low door of humility. Without humility, we will not see God. And one of the key themes throughout the book of Proverbs is this idea of humility. Solomon teaches that the requirement of heaven is a humble spirit. Proverbs 15:33 states, "The fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor." In our last message, we talked about the fear of the Lord and what that means. It doesn't mean to be petrified of God. It means to take God seriously. It means to acknowledge who God is and who we are in comparison. You might say the first half of that, acknowledging God for who He is, that's honoring God. Seeing who we are by comparison is humbling ourselves. And here the fear of the Lord and humility are tied together. Humility is one of the attitudes that defines the fear of the Lord. But what do we mean by humility? I mean, it's a word that's common enough, but do we ever really stop to think of what it means? And I think sometimes we get the wrong idea of what humility is. In the late 1800s, a South African preacher named Andrew Murray wrote a little book entitled Humility. And in it he writes, "Humility is perfect quietness of heart. It is to expect nothing, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing that is done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me, and when I am blamed or despised. It is to have a blessed home in the Lord, where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret, and am at peace as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and above is trouble." The humble person is not one who thinks poorly of himself, rather the person who doesn't think of himself at all. Another classic preacher by the name of Horatius Bonar had this to say about what humility is and what it is not. "Let us fling away self-esteem and high-mindedness, for it is the very essence of unbelief. Be meek, be poor in spirit, be humble, be teachable, be gentle. Putting away all high thoughts and lofty imaginations, either about who we are or what we can do, content to take the obscurest corner and the lowest seat. And this, not to indulge in false lowliness or in the pride that apes humility, feeding our vanity with the thoughts that we are martyrs, or by puffing up our mind with the idea of wonderful condescension, or by brooding over our supposed wrongs and trials. Let us be truly humble, as was the Son of God, content to live unknown and to do our work unnoticed, as a work not for the eye of man, but of God. If you have gifts, use them quietly and modestly, not ostentatiously. Do not go around telling others of your experience or giving your opinion or taking rank above your seniors. Do not think that all zeal and wisdom is confined to you and the few around you. Do not condemn others because they do not go along with you in all things. Do not speak of them as cold or dead or unspiritual because they disagree with you. Do not think that no one cares about souls like you do, that no one can state the gospel or pray like you can, or that God is not likely to bless anybody as much as he will you. Be lowly. And show this not by speaking poorly of yourselves, or by using that conceited phrase, "in my humble opinion," as some do in order to show their humility, but by not speaking of yourself at all. Keep self in the background, and don't say or do anything that looks like you're baiting a hook for a little praise. That's humility. I can remember as a junior high student listening to a very well-known speaker, youth speaker that day, and he made a statement that just blew my mind. He said, "An inferiority complex is a form of pride." I'm like, what? It's just the opposite. How could? Nah, that ain't right. But then he went on to explain. He said, "We usually think of pride as thinking too much of yourself, and inferiority as thinking too low of yourself. But either way, you're thinking about yourself." And that's what these two classic preachers said, the same thing. Humility isn't going around telling everybody how bad you are, or how poor you are, or how untalented you are, or whatever. True humility means you don't talk about yourself. You're not looking out for yourself. You are so concerned with serving God and serving others that self just fades into the background. A truly humble person doesn't bring up themselves. That's what it means to be humble. Humility is very fragile. It's a virtue that if you realize you have it, you've lost it. Ever heard somebody say, "I'm humble and proud of it"? My best attribute is my humility. Yeah, it just doesn't work, does it? Because again, we're promoting ourselves, putting ourselves to the forefront. Now, why would I say humility is the requirement of heaven? Jesus said in Matthew 5:3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." To be poor in spirit is to acknowledge our spiritual poverty, really our spiritual bankruptcy before God. We are sinners in God's presence. We deserve nothing but His wrath, His punishment for sin. That's all we bring to God. Somebody that comes to God and say, "Hey, God, I'm your gift to everybody, and you know, you did a really good job when you created me. Just think of all the great things I can do for you." God can't use a person like that. It's only when we acknowledge who we truly are in God's sight that we will bow in humility. See, a person who doesn't think they need God will never turn from their sins. They'll never rely on Christ. Why? Because they don't need to. I got this. I can handle it. But it's when a person comes to the point of saying, "I don't got this. I can't handle it. I can't do this anymore." That's when they bow before God. And God can lift them up. It's no wonder then, as Andrew Murray concludes, humility, the place of entire dependence on God, is from the very nature of things the first duty and the highest virtue and the root of every virtue. And so pride, the loss of this humility, is the root of every sin and evil. Humility is the greatest virtue. Pride is the greatest vice. Humility is the low door into heaven. Now, normally in my messages, I have the classic three-point outline. Today, I'm going to combine the second and third points. Because as we go through these verses in Proverbs, you're going to see both emphasized. It's a form of parallelism where one line contrasts the other. And you'll hear something about humility and the opposite about pride. So for the remainder of the message, we're going to talk about the rewards of humility and the repercussions of haughtiness. Now you say, what's haughtiness? It's another word for pride. It's one that we find right here in the book of Proverbs. Now I mentioned last Sunday that God hates pride. I know that's a strong word. That's a word a lot of people don't like to use, but it's a word the Bible uses. As Max Lucado notes, God doesn't dislike arrogance. He doesn't disapprove of arrogance. He's not unfavorably disposed to arrogance. God hates arrogance. That's the word he uses. And we saw this last week in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. Doesn't mince any words here. And what's number one on the list? Haughty eyes. Proud eyes. A proud look. A proud outlook on life. One that says, I've got this. I don't need anybody. I don't need God. I got it. And how does God respond to that? I hate it. Very clear. Don't need much explanation there. Over in chapter 8, verse 13, another verse we looked at last Sunday. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. What's the next line? I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior and perverse speech. Pride is number one on God's hate parade. C.S. Lewis wrote, according to Christian teachers, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are merely flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. That's what pride is. It is the root of all evil, not money. And by the way, that verse in Timothy says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Pride is the root of all evil. I would suggest that any sin you can think of, if you trace it back, it begins in pride. It was in pride that Lucifer said, I will be like the Most High. I will be like God. How'd that work for him? Not so well. He got kicked out of heaven and ended up on earth. So what's he do? He goes to Eve through the serpent. And what was the temptation? I know everybody says it's to eat the fruit. But you know what the temptation was? You will be like God. Sound vaguely familiar? That same loser line that he had before. And it didn't work for him, so he's just going to mess up God's creation with it. And Eve bit it. Literally. Yeah, she hook, line, and sinker. And that pride is the root of all kinds of evil. So it shouldn't surprise us that God takes a stand against pride and for humility. Turn with me to Proverbs 11, verse 2. Here we see the outcomes of both of these things. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes honor. Now, I've explained before about how Hebrew poetry works. It's a parallel thought rather than rhyming words. But this is one of the rare cases where we actually have rhyming words in Hebrew. The Hebrew word for pride is zedon, which literally means boiling up. And the word for disgrace is kalon, and it literally means deflated. I love the image that puts in my mind. Think of a balloon, right? Puffed up, full of hot air, full of himself. And God comes along and just kind of lets the air out, right? He goes, and heads up on the ground. That's what happens to the proud. They get so full of themselves, they're so puffed up. The New Testament uses that phrase. Full of hot air. And God has great ways of coming along and just letting the air out a little bit. Then it's a disgrace. We end up deflated. Now, the word humility in the end of this verse, with humility comes wisdom. It's a very rare word. It only appears twice in the Old Testament. Here and in Micah 6:8. What does the Lord require of you? To love mercy, to show justice, and to walk humbly with your God. Same word. This is what God requires of us. Now turn over to chapter 13 in verse 10. Pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who can take advice. Whenever you see a quarrel going on, you guarantee you'll find pride behind it. You get a bunch of people together that think they know it. They're not listening to each other, are they? Oh, they're trying to make sure they get heard. They're making sure that their idea gets across because it's so much better than anybody else's, right? We don't listen. We don't learn. And it's almost impossible for a proud person to learn anything unless they come upon it themselves. But notice, one who will listen to advice gains wisdom. We can learn from each other. And sometimes God teaches us through the most unlikely sources. Ever heard of a guy named Balaam? God talked through his donkey. If God can talk through a donkey, he can talk through you or somebody around you that you might not think knows anything at all. And it's, wow, that's a great insight. God loves to do that. But for the one who is proud, their minds are closed to any other opinions or ideas. In Proverbs 15, verse 25, the Lord tears down a proud man's house, but he keeps the widow's boundaries intact. You say, well, I don't see anything about humble there. Here he contrasts a proud person who is wealthy with a widow who would have been among the poorest of that culture. And unfortunately, often those who are successful materially or financially, it does tend to lead to pride. We tend to rely on what we can do or what we have done, what we have accomplished. Whereas someone who has nothing, and in those days a widow, I mean, this was before Social Security and all of that, widows then had to scrape by to get to survive. But God looked out for them. And they had no pride of their own. They just relied upon what God could give them. Pride is self-reliance, depending on the Lord is humility. One commentary notes, the most desolate who have God's aid have more permanent good than the self-reliant sinner. We think we've got it all together. We're just setting ourselves up. Over one chapter to chapter 16 and verse 5, the Lord detests all the proud of heart, Be sure of this, they will not go unpunished. That proud of heart, this is one that sets themselves up presumptuously against God, like Lucifer did. You know, the thing about pride, the reason why God hates pride so much is it violates the first principle of wisdom, which is the fear of the Lord. It's the exact opposite of that. And it drives people away from God rather than to them. And you know, one of the sins of pride is attributing to ourselves what God has given us. It's looking at what we have and say, I did this. Nebuchadnezzar did that. Next thing you know, he was chomping on grass. Lost his mind because he was so full of himself and wouldn't acknowledge that it was God who had given them all that he had. We've got to be careful of that. In that same chapter, go down to verse 18. Here's a verse I'm sure everybody has heard from the book of Proverbs. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before the fall. How many of you heard that? Pride goes before the fall. That was not Ben Franklin, that was Solomon, the book of Proverbs. And the very next verse adds to that, better to be lowly in spirit and among the oppressed than to share plunder with the proud. It's that humility, it's what Jesus talked about, being poor in spirit, that brings us close to God, but it's pride and arrogance that goes before the fall. Charles Stanley points out, while not all destructions come from pride, pride always ends in destruction. And usually we lose the very thing we feel most proud of having achieved, earned, owned, or accomplished. Many times, especially among his children, if God sees that we're getting proud, we're getting a little too big for our britches, he'll take away the very thing we're proud of. Just to remind us, it ain't about you. It's all about me. You say, God wouldn't do that. Oh, yes, he will. Because he hates pride. He doesn't want to see it destroy you. And this is the route that it often takes. Proverbs 18:12 says virtually the same thing. Before his downfall, a man's heart is proud, but humility comes before honor. Now we see the flip side. Sure, pride leads to destruction, but what does humility lead to? Honor. Now, I know that's backwards from the way our culture thinks, because our culture thinks you've got to assert yourself, you've got to sell yourself, you've got to tell the whole world how great you are, because nobody else is going to. God says, no, you leave that to me. You stay humble, God will lift you up. But being proud just leads to destruction. Over in chapter 21, verse 4 calls out pride for what it really is. Here's that word haughty again. Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked, are what? Sin. Don't mince words. We're not talking about a character flaw. We're not talking about a personality quirk or a bad habit. It's sin. Pride is sin. C.S. Lewis notes, pride is spiritual cancer. It eats up the very possibility of love, of contentment, or even common sense. Pride is destructive. Later in that same chapter, verse 24, the proud and arrogant man, Mocker is his name, he behaves in overweening pride. Let's be honest, how many of you used the word overweening in the last week? Last month? How about ever? I haven't. I had to look it up. You know what overweening means? Arrogant. Here's a person who has proud pride. They're proud of their pride. They have arrogant pride. He's just stacking the words on top of each other. And that's what happens. Our pride leads to more pride. Our pride leads to more destruction and disgrace. It just builds on itself. Over in chapter 25, Proverbs 25, verses 6 and 7. Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence. Do not claim a place among great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before a nobleman. Some of you may remember the story Jesus taught in Luke 14, verses 7 through 10, about those who love to be honored. And he said, why go take the place of honor and have someone come along and say, you don't belong here, get out. I mean, that's humiliating. Why not go sit in the corner and wait for someone to say, what are you doing here? You need to be up here in a place of honor. See, that's humility. Humility doesn't say, I deserve to be up there. Humility says, I'm content to be right here. And if nobody notices me, that's fine. And if somebody invites me up, that's okay too. But to put yourself up too high and somebody come along and knock you down a peg, that's another story, isn't it? And Jesus warned about that as well. And we got to be careful, even Christian circles, that we don't end up promoting ourselves too much. Now, unfortunately, that happens in a lot of ministry. And it might be from the pulpit, it might be worship leaders, it might be ministry leaders. It's all about them. And the spotlight is all on them. And how talented they are, and how great they are, and how effective they are. Wait a minute, where's the praise going here? It needs to be going to God. So let others praise you, and not you yourself. We see this in Proverbs 25, verse 27. It is not good to eat too much honey, nor is it honorable to seek one's own honor. Too much of a good thing. Now, there's nothing wrong with being honored, but there is everything wrong with seeking it yourself. Let others honor you. You do the right thing, and you let others praise you. You see this in Proverbs 27:2. Let another praise you and not your own mouth. Someone else, not your own lips. You don't have to promote yourself. You let God promote you. You let others praise you. Don't be going around, as we read earlier, baiting the hook, hoping somebody will praise you. That's not the way of humility. But God will lift you up. In that same chapter, chapter 27, look at verse 21. The crucible for silver and the furnace for gold, but a man is tested by the praise he receives. That might surprise you. You might think that a person is tested by the adversity they go through, and sometimes adversity does test our faith. But you know what a great test of someone's character is? Have somebody praise them. How do they handle that? Does it make their head go... Or do they say, oh, no, don't praise me, no, I can't do anything. That's false humility. True humility says, thank you, and thank God. That's simple. That refusal to accept help or to accept praise is actually a form of pride. But to receive it humbly, that's what God wants to see. And two verses from chapter 29 wrap it up. Proverbs 29:1, a man who remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. They pass the point of no return. And that idea being stiff-necked, the idea being stubborn, and that's another corollary of pride. We get very stubborn. Nobody can tell me anything. I've already got my mind made up because, you know, I know it and it's right. So don't even try to change my mind. And God comes along and he's trying to do exactly that. Nope, I got this. God says there's a point in time when it's all over. And there is no remedy. You don't know where that point is. That's the catch. We don't know how far we can go until God shuts the door and says, that's it, but the time will come. If we persist in pride, we're headed for trouble. And then verse 23, A man's pride brings him low, but a man of lowly spirit gains honor. Again, the irony is apparent. The person who tries to exalt himself is brought down. The person who doesn't try is exalted. It's the person who's not looking for the honor that gets it. It's the person who's striving for the honor that doesn't. Now, I began this morning in the parable of a short king who placed a low door to force anyone coming in his presence to bow down. You know, that didn't guarantee respect or humility toward the king. It just made it look that way. God has established the fact that there's a low door into heaven, not because he's short, not because he wants people to make a show of bowing down, but because it is only the humble who will place their trust in him. I'd like to conclude this morning with a poem written by Annie Johnson Flint entitled "The Low Door of the Cross." Oh, straight and narrow is the door, the little door of loss, by which we enter into Christ, the low door of the cross. But when we put away our pride and contrition come, we find it is the only way that leads to God and home. Oh, straight and lowly are the doors by which Christ comes to us. We bar the entrance gates of joy, and when he finds them thus, by strange and small doors of woe and want, of trial and of pain, he enters in to share our lives to our eternal gain. The narrow doors he brings us to, the little doors and low, what large rooms they will open on if only we will go. The strange small doors of work and want, straight doors of grief and pain, what riches they will lead us to, what everlasting gain. I ask you this morning, will you enter into God's presence through the low door of humility? Forget about who you are, what you've done, what you've accomplished, what you've accumulated. It is God that deserves all the praise and the glory. And if you want to be honored, you must humble yourselves. Because if you seek your own honor, you will be humbled, and it is not a pleasant experience.